Yuches Kislev, the Chag of Geula of the Alter Rebbe, the Chag of Geula of Chassidus, the Chag of Geula of Judaism Bechlau. I always tell guys we've been learning Chassidus our entire lives, but we just don't know it. Chassidus has impacted Judaism in ways which we can't even fathom, and hopefully tonight with our guest speaker, we're going to speak a little bit about the union of what Chassidus is and what that means to us in 2019. Rabbi Berg, first of all, is a Rebbe of mine, and ever since I started learning Torah by him in his NCSY Kolo Night Seder Chabura to the Chevra, the troubled Chevra. I was a Madrich, but the troubled Chevra. And we had a lot of fun, and there I learned a lot about Torah. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot about Rav Berg. And from there on, it's only his light keeps on shining throughout the world. He's going around the world. He's doing amazing things, and it's really, really an honor, to have him with us tonight. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a big schus to be here. There's a big machlokes. Some many of you know this. There was a big machlokes amongst the disciples of the Maggid of Mezrich. If the Torah of Chassidus should be spread in a public way. The Alter Rebbe took a very strong position that there should be ahafatza, that there should be spreading of the Baal Shem Tov's Torah throughout the world. It's hard to really think about what that position meant back then, especially when there was such a snagdus, there was such a movement that was so anti-chassidus bichlal, to come and to say that we're going to be spreading this Torah everywhere. It's really unfathomable to think that the Alter Rebbe had that vision. But there were Talmidim of the Maggid that were very against the Alter Rebbe in this area, even though everybody understood who the Alter Rebbe was. And they said, if we spread these concepts to the masses, such deep, such lofty, such holy concepts, people are going to end up trampling on these concepts. They're not going to understand them. They're going to end up becoming lost. And one day they found in the garbage writings of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. And so there was a big uproar. See, the Alter Rebbe said, you see that it's not going to be what you want it to be. You're going to find teachings of Chassidus in the garbage. And the Alter Rebbe said exactly the opposite. And he gave the following mashal. It's a well-known mashal, but you can't have a Yud Tes Kislev without this mashal, so we may as well say it. He said there was once a king, and the king had a crown jewel, and the crown jewel was the most prized possession of the king, and it was priceless. Unfortunately, the king's daughter became ill. All the doctors from all over the place, they couldn't heal her. One doctor said, I know how to heal her, but you're not going to like this. You're going to have to take the crown jewel, you're going to have to grind it up, mamish into dust. You're going to have to put it into water and Pasha just feed her. Of course, the king was distraught to hear this, that he was going to lose his crown jewel. But it got to the point where his daughter, she Pasha couldn't swallow. It was the end. She couldn't eat. There was nothing to talk about. And so they began to pour this water with the ground up dust of the crown jewel into her mouth. And of course, not everything made it in, and some of the water spilled out onto the side because she could barely swallow. It was just pouring into her. But this is what was necessary, and this is what saved the princess. And Alter Rebbe said, so too with Chassidus. Chassidus took the deepest concepts in Kabbalah and it made it accessible to us. And of course, whenever you're sharing the deepest, the loftiest, the holiest concepts, of course, some of it is going to get lost along the way. Of course, there will be people that will use it inappropriately. Of course, there will be people that will not understand these things in the correct way. But it's necessary to save Klal Yisrael. It's necessary to save Klal Yisrael. Because whatever gets in, it mamish works. As a person thinks about the history of Klal Yisrael, and Bifrat today, there has never been a time in history where it's been so clear to the entire world that now more than ever, these teachings are not just necessary, but they're mission critical. And if you look in the world today, we mamish see that it's being mechaye mason, these teachings. And we see boys that are in high school and girls that are in high school, and they're mamish struggling so much with their Judaism. We'll discuss exactly what it is that they're struggling with. And we see that a person opens their heart and opens their soul and shares with them the teachings of Chassidus, we see that it mamish has the most incredible impact on a person. It's hard to imagine that the Baal Shem Tov, that the Magid, that the Alter Rebbe, and all of the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov, it's hard to imagine that they knew that this door was coming. But they spoke about it. They spoke about there's going to be a door in Ikvas of the Mashiach that's coming, and we're writing for that door. Rabbi Nachman himself said, most people didn't understand what he was talking about in his time, and because people weren't suffering from anxiety and depression in the way that they are today. And Rabbi Nachman said, you'll see that in the door that's coming before Mashiach, this Torah is going to make perfect sense. And it's an amazing thing. Today, Uman is filled with tens of thousands of Jews. Not a month goes by when some random person won't come over to me and say, you go to Uman, you go to Uman. I don't go to Uman, I have to be in Yeshiva Rosh Hashanah. You have to go to Uman. It's random people coming over and I have to go to Uman. I have to be in Eretz Yisrael. It's an unbelievable thing the way it moves people. When the Alter Rebbe was put in jail, it was clear to the Alter Rebbe. It was clear to him that there was a kitrig in Shemayim that was stopping him from spreading Chassidus. It was clear to him that there was a din Torah going in on Shemayim, and it wasn't poshut that he was going to be able to spread Chassidus. The Alter Rebbe spent 53 days in jail in Petersburg. 53 days in jail, what was he doing? They were interrogating him as to what exactly the teachings of Chassidus were. He was sitting with these jailers, with these interrogators, and he was teaching them Chassidus, because the criminality of what he had done was he was using Chassidus to overthrow the Tsarist government. In the Alter Rebbe's world, he understood that the Tsarist government was just a mashal for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so the Alter Rebbe explained why it was necessary, what the teachings were. And in a miraculous fashion, mamish in the most miraculous fashion, nobody walked out of that jail. 53 days in, he walked out. And he understood, the Alter Rebbe understood, that this was a simen mishamayim, that there should be a hafatza, that Torah should be spread, the Torah HaChassidus Bifrat should be spread in a way that had never been spread before. 53 prakim of Tanya were written connected the 53 days that the Alter Rebbe spent in jail. And it's fascinating. If you look at the Alter Rebbe's writings before he went to jail, and then you look at his writing after he went to jail, it's almost as if you're reading two completely different authors. Almost as if you're reading two completely different authors. You'll notice there's certain terminology that's the same. But the style, the readability, the comprehension, so much clearer after the Alter Rebbe came out of jail. Why? The Alter Rebbe did the hardest thing in the world. I saw once a mashal wrote down Pichasudos that there was a professor who was teaching doctorate level classes. And one day he walked in to his class and he said, next week's class that's scheduled to take place on Monday, we're not going to have that class. I was given a very big honor. What's the honor? My grandson invited me to his third grade class to speak about what it is that I do for a living. So class is canceled, come next Monday. But you're all invited if you'd like to come to my grandson's third grade class. If you'd like to see the presentation on astrophysics, I'm going to be presenting it to third graders. So of course, all these doctoral students, they weren't interested in going to hear their professor speak to third graders, except for one chacham. The top guy in the class understood that this was going to be an opportunity that he was never going to have again. So he went, he shows up to the elementary school, and he walks into the third grade class on the day that his professor is presenting. The next week, all the other Talmidim in the shir, they said, what did you learn? You went to a third grade class. He said, it was by far the most masterful class that the teacher has given the entire year. So how could that be? When he's giving class to us, when he's saying over the lecture, he's speaking out the highest ideas. It's so difficult to comprehend. You have to know so much background information in order to understand and to review. And it's so difficult that I find myself reviewing the class 5 or 6 times just to get 80% of it. You're telling me that the third grade class was the greatest class he gave all year? He said, yeah. Because he took the same material that he's teaching us and he boiled it down all the way until the essence. And then it was capable of being given over to a third grader. It didn't have all of the details, but the essence was the same. And the brilliance to take something from being these exceptionally lofty ideas and making them for a third grader. I had never seen brilliance like that before from our professor. And so too when it comes to the teachings of Chassidus. The Alter Rebbe took the deepest, the loftiest, the highest concepts, and he boiled them down to their essence, and he gave them to us in such a readable fashion, in such an understandable fashion. But I want to harp on one nakuda, and then we'll go back to singing for a couple of minutes. To boil something down to its essence does not mean that it's not sophisticated. What it means is that you're touching the soul of the matter. This is what's missing in Yiddishkeit today. This is what Chassidus provides us. This is why people are flocking to these teachings. It's because the Black Gemara is a beautiful and amazing thing. And all of Chassidus is to get us back to that Black Gemara. It's not Chas V'Shalom in any way to replace the Black Gemara. And to finish Masechtas Be'iyin and Bekiyas. I shouldn't have to say that, but today if you say something that's positive about Chassidus, all of a sudden people get very nervous that you're saying something anti-Gemara, and it's b'chlal not true. The whole yisoid of Chassidus is to get us back to that Black Gemara, but not to the externality of the Black Gemara, Chas V'Shalom. Not to the intellectualism of the Black Gemara. That's what's destroying people today. Because you could learn today a Black Gemara like you could sit in a biology class, like you could sit in a math class. That it's possible for a Jew today, it's a hard thing to even say it out loud, but it's possible for a Jew today to be sitting in a high school classroom or to be sitting in a base medrash in Eretz Yisrael and to be a professor of Rashi and to be a professor of Abaya and Rava, but that it in no way impacts his davening, that it in no way impacts the way that he makes brachas, that he wakes up in the morning, that he speaks to his wife, that he speaks to his chavrusa. That it's a giant game of gaiva of who's going to be the top guy in the shir, and who's going to be the biggest masmid, and who's going to be the last guy in the base medrash. That they could say about him, without getting to the soul of the matter, without getting to the essence of the thing, you could lose the forest for the trees. The whole yesoid of Chassidus is to reintroduce HaKadosh Baruch Hu into Yiddishkeit. Because as we all know in this room, even if you yourself haven't suffered from this, but you know people that are suffering from this, it's possible to wake up and put on tefillin. It's possible to wake up and say all the words of davening. It's possible to shakel. It's possible to be a masmid. And at the end of the day, it has nothing to do with your shemayim. It has nothing to do with Avos Hashem. And you'll walk in the same way that you came in, you'll walk out the same way 12 months later, whatever it is, 2 years later, 3 years later, you walk out knowing tremendous amounts of Shas. But it won't have made a Kihu Zev an impact. Because it was missing the Eibishter. The Alter Rebbe gave us, I'm focusing on the Alter Rebbe because it's the Alter Rebbe's Chag, but it's whatever Chassidus moves you. Is reintroducing HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our Yiddishkeit. That we shouldn't be satisfied, and we're not satisfied. That we shouldn't be satisfied coming out of a year in Shalvim and not being able to fundamentally say, my Shabbos table is not going to look the same. That my Shabbos table is going to be a place where the Rebbeinu Shlomo is present. The Divrei Torah, the singing, the feeling, the conversation, my davening is not going to be the same, not because I'm putting on a show for anybody else, but because every time I open my mouth to talk, I'm talking to the Eibishter. Because I have kavana, because I have intention. Over the next, whatever it is, over the next couple of minutes that we're going to spend together singing, dancing, and trying to get close to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, the goal for tonight, however long you're going to be here, I know there's very firm people that need to leave. However long you're going to be here tonight, the goal for tonight, for those that are here, is to have a night that is not just stam, another night of singing, it's not just stam, another night of ruach and yeshiva. It's a night of introspection. It's a night of asking ourselves, Ayek, where am I holding in the relationship with the Rebbeinu Shlomo? Yiratzeh may be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will that we're zoicha, in a serious way, that we're zoicha to really ask ourselves a very deep question. We have here, he wasn't introduced, a very special friend of mine, Rav Josh Goldstein Shlita, I've had the privilege of working with for many years. He's a Baal Menagin par excellence. He knows how to touch the soul in a very deep way. Every time he picks up an instrument, Jews' souls just open up and mamish fly out. So we should be zeicha to sing together. And you should bless us all with your music that we should mamish go le'ilu le'ilu.
Hey! Oh,
Ben Tova Chava, my son who's in the hospital. Everything should be okay. First, he took a lot of
rest. Amen. Amen.
There's nothing in Hasidus that's new. If there was something in Hasidus that was new, that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say by Har Sinai, so then of course the Misnagdim would have been right. There's something in music called a covering a band or covering a song. Every Baal Menagin, when he sings somebody else's music, he sings it in his own way, which of course has his own unique flair. The notes of the music could be the same, the words could be the same, but the niggin itself is something totally anderish. And so too, when it came to the Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid, and the Alter Rebbe, they were saying the same thing that had been said for generations, but saying in a totally new way. So where was the subtle difference? Where was the nuance? There's a Medrash in Parshas Naso that the Alter Rebbe popularized. This, to me, is the foundation of all of Chassidus. When you ask somebody, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world? If you ask somebody who knows a little bit about Yiddishkeit, so you're going to get a lot of different answers. The answer of the Ramban, the answer of the Ramchal. The Medrash in Parshas Naso gives an answer to this question. And the answer goes as follows. Nis'ave HaKadosh Baruch Hu lios lo yisbarach dira b'tachtoinim. God desired to have a dwelling place in the world down below. Nisave, God had a taiva. Nisave, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lios lo yisbarach, he wanted for himself, dira b'tachtoinim. Dira means a dwelling place. B'tachtoinim means in the world down below. There's a couple of questions that we need to ask on this medrash that the Alter Rebbe himself addresses. First of all, what does it mean a taiva? What does it mean a dira? What does it mean to have a dwelling place? And what does it mean tachtainu? Many years ago, I was taking a walk in Los Angeles down Pico. I was walking with a person who was going to the following year become a Talmud in the yeshiva. And he said, I don't do anything until I understand the reason why. Which is a very 17-year-old thing to say. I'm not going to do anything until I understand the reason why. There's something exceptionally beautiful about understanding why. But the truth of the matter is, there's something that comes before understanding why, and that's the thing that you can't possibly put into words. A taiva comes before an explanation. A taiva is irrational. It's beyond rational. It's before rational. And we all understand this intuitively, that there are things that cannot possibly be put into words. For example, if somebody would ask me why it is that I love my wife, what answer could one possibly give them? Because anything you say is going to end up sounding horrific. I love my wife because she's a good cook. So if you love your wife, if you love your wife because she's a good cook, then you don't love your wife, you love food. Or even if you do love your wife, what happens if, chas v'shalom, your wife forgets how to cook? My grandmother, alei shalom, by the time I met my grandmother, her cooking was horrific. It was horrific. It was the worst thing in the world. We would go down to Florida. I remember as a kid saying, okay, I'm not going to eat for a week. She made hamburgers in a toaster oven. It was mamash a disaster on every single level. My father, I come from a family of big men. I said to my father, I'm like, Dad, what happened? When did, like, she doesn't know how to cook? My father said, it's a crazy thing. When I was growing up, your grandmother was the best cook in the world. Somewhere along the line, she mamish just made a hard left and she totally forgot how to cook. Nobody understands it. I used to go to her house. I used to eat, you know, those Stella Doro Swiss fudge cookies. I would eat them by the package because I was so hungry. I'd eat them by the package if I wasn't hungry, but I'd eat. Yeah, the miso. So she pasha forgot how to cook. Could you imagine a man who's married to her for 50 years and he says, the lady forgot how to cook, I'm out. Do it with your children. I love my children because you'll get crazy answers to this question. I love my children because they're my legacy. You know what type of pressure that puts on a child? Chas v'shalom, that child doesn't behave in the way that the father wants him to behave, and then it won't be the same legacy. There's no possible reason that you could give. There's nothing that would fit into words. So the truth of the matter is that anybody that's had a child, when they hold their child for the first time, they're holding that beautiful little baby. You can't explain. You'll have to see it for yourself. You can't explain the overwhelming feelings of love that you have for that child. It's not shaykh to the world of words. And the truth of the matter is that other people see the baby and they don't think that that baby is the most beautiful thing in the world. Especially if the baby's mom has just been born. This is like crinkled skin and it's like more or less looks like an alien. And you see the parents are holding the child as if it's like the most beautiful, most precious possession they ever had. Especially if it's the first. When we had my first daughter, I was like, I can't tell you how beautiful she was to me. Years later, I saw pictures, I was like, ooh, mama's rough. Very worn off. But in that moment, what could the child possibly have done for me that I should love that child? Nisava HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lios Lo Yisbarach Dir B'Tachtayinim starts with the following premise. If you want to talk about why God created the world, you're going to miss a very fundamental premise. Because you think it could be put into words. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this because. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world because He wants you to do a mitzvah. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't love you, He loves a mitzvah. And that means by extension, He doesn't love you if you do aveiros. In fact, He's not interested in you bichlal. So the whole yesod is, don't try to understand this in a way that a human being cannot comprehend. There's logic of the mind, and then there's the chachma of the soul. The chachma of the soul is where it begins. Person has to be able to look inside of themselves to find a place where they say, I have no idea why in the world the Rabbeinu Shalom wants me. But that's the taiva the Rabbeinu Shalom has. The Rabbeinu Shalom has a taiva to have a relationship with me. That's the beginning. Then there's the second stage. Adira. Adira means a dwelling place. What happens in Adira? In Adira is where there's a relationship. We said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a taiva for a relationship with us. Specifically in Adira. What's the yesod? What's the foundational element of Adira? Adira means a place where you could be totally and absolutely comfortable. I don't know if any of you in your lives had to move from one house to another. I remember when I was in 10th grade, we moved from Far Rockaway to Lawrence. For those that know, that's a big move in many ways. We went from Baruch Hashem, a very beautiful and very warm, a little bit smaller house in Far Rockaway, Baruch Hashem, a little bit of a larger house in Lawrence. My whole life that I can remember at least, I lived in 707 Annapolis Street in Far Rockaway, New York. And then one day, you're living in Lawrence, New York, and it's something totally different. And the house is much more beautiful, and the driveway is much longer, and there's a basketball hoop at the end of the driveway, and there's a big backyard, and there's a beautiful grill off of a beautiful patio, and the house has many more rooms. And when you first move in, you feel like an absolute stranger. You feel like, this is not my house. It's not my house. It's not my place. I don't know this bed. I don't know this room. Everything is more beautiful, but it's not mine. I don't feel comfortable here. And it takes years until you transition, until it becomes yours. Even now, Baruch Hashem, I've been living in Eretz Yisrael for 12 years. The biggest gift in the world that the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us is that we have the opportunity to come live in Eretz Yisrael. All of us should be blessed that we should be able to spend our entire lives here. But even now, you should know, driving the streets of Ramat Beit Shemesh, which is right next to the Five Towns, driving the streets of Ramat Beit Shemesh, it's not the same. I was just back in America just now, and I was driving in the Five Towns, and I don't even have to think about where I'm going. I don't have to think about it. And even if I don't know where something is, I be'erech know where it is. I know how to maneuver enough around to get to the place I need to go. Because my gears are the ankusa, it's a place where I'm comfortable. What does the Rebbeinu Shalom desire? The Rebbeinu Shalom desires to be comfortable. Right now, our world is a place that's not comfortable for the Eibishter. Because he's hidden. When somebody is hidden, that's the most painful thing in the world. And I'll tell you a true story. It's a very painful story, and it's a story I'm not proud of, but I believe in the power of authenticity. So I'll share with you a story. There was a young man who we grew up with, who was a fine person. He was a wonderful kid. But he wasn't a cool kid. Today they would have given him some diagnosis. I don't know exactly what the diagnosis would have been. But he was a socially awkward kid. So he was a kid that got picked on. And I'm not proud to tell you this, but we were children. And children don't necessarily know that you shouldn't pick on kids that are different. And so we had a chevra of kids in our shul in Young Israel for Akwe that we would pick on this kid Avi, who was the nicest, the sweetest, most wonderful person. But he would get picked on. So one time I remember that we were playing hide and go seek in shul. And we made up, I don't know whose idea it was, but I know that I was a part of it. We made up that we're going to play hide and go seek. And Avi's going to go hide. And we'll all tell Avi that we're going to hide. And we're all just going to leave shul. It was like Shabbos afternoon groups. It was like the end of Shabbos afternoon groups. So Avi went and he hid wherever he hid. And we all just left. And Avi stayed in his hiding spot thinking he was winning. And he's in his hiding spot, and he's in his hiding spot, and he's in his hiding spot. And eventually it occurred to him, nobody's looking for me. There was an older kid in the shul, a tzaddik, the son of a tzaddik. His father was the gabbai of the shul, never took a penny. Came to the shul every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning to open up the shul. Mamish, the sweetest man in the world, never had a bad word for anybody. He refused to take any kibbutim from the shul. Every year at the shul dinner, they tried to honor him. They told him under no circumstances would he be honored. Finally, after like 30 years, they presented him with an award without asking him. Mamish, a tzaddik of a guy. And of course, he had a sensitive, beautiful, wonderful son who was a little bit older than myself, a little bit older than my chevra. And Tuesday night, that week, we had Tuesday night groups. It was like our midweek thing. So Tuesday night, he came over to us, and he said, "You guys did a really terrible thing to Avi." So we were joking around, we were like, yeah. He said he came out after hours of hiding to find that nobody was looking for him. And he was so hurt. And I realized I was mamish a little kid when it happened. I don't even know how old I was, mamish little. I remember feeling, what did I just do to that kid? Like, it started off in my mind as like a joke. Like, he'll come out after 20 minutes, he'll realize nobody found him. How long does it take to find kids? And he goes, well, for Akwe, the whole thing is smaller than the size of this room. Like, how long could it possibly take? He mamish stayed in there for hours. Is there anything more painful than being right there, hidden in plain sight, and nobody's looking for you? The Rebbeinu Shalom has a taiva. The taiva is to be found. The taiva is to become comfortable in our world. The taiva is that we should look for him. And where? Where does the Eibishter want to be found? B'tachtonim. What does that mean?
two chaverim of mine are chassidim of a certain Rebbe. I don't want to give any details because it could be that some of you know at least one of these guys. So they were by their Rebbe and they were walking in the forest together. And they're deep, deep into the forest. And the Rebbe says to them, "How long have you guys known each other?" Now these chaverim, they were like the closest chaverim in the world. They said, "Rebbe, we've known each other our whole lives. Our parents are friends. We were mamish born together. We're the same age. We went to school together our entire life. We're mamish best friends." And the Rebbe said, "Not only are you not best friends, you're not even what I would call friends." Both of them were mystified. He said, "Rebbe, what are you talking about?" And he said, "You know, you both come to me to talk to me about your issues. And you keep telling me there's nobody in the world that you've ever told this to before. Rebbe, you're the first person I'm ever sharing this with." He said, "You guys are best friends, and I've been talking to you for years. And you pasha don't know these things about each other. So you're not best friends. You're not even friends. Where's the authenticity? Why aren't you willing to admit to each other your deepest flaws, the things that you're so not proud of?" So these guys were blown away. They thought they were mamish the closest of friends. The Rebbe said to them, "I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to leave you in the forest. I'll walk back by myself. Stay here in the forest and talk to each other." So I'm friends with both of them, but admittedly I'm much closer with one of them. The one that I heard this from is the one I'm much closer with. He told me they stayed in the forest for hours. And they were mamish, it was like his baidus, but with each other. And they mamish started talking. From the beginning, all of the things that they had never told anyone except for the Rebbe, they never told anyone in the world, the most embarrassing things. And they spent hours doing this. And at the end of that sichas nefesh, at the end of that just pouring out their hearts to each other, they said, "It's mamish the craziest thing. We've known each other for so long, and we feel like we never knew each other until right now." And the most amazing thing happened, the gift of that vulnerability, the gift of that authenticity, is that they shared a common humanity. That there was something that both of them were struggling with, and that both of them were so embarrassed to admit that they were both struggling with. And once they were able to say, "Oh, you're struggling with this too," it lightened the load. And that's exactly what this Rebbe was trying to accomplish with them. If you have a relationship with somebody and you only show them the best parts of yourself, you're not in a relationship with them. Because there's no you. There's no presence. There's no tachtainim. When we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants dirib tachtainim, we mean all the way down. The worst parts of yourself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be present in your mitzvos, of course. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be present in your aveiros. That's what's called tshuva. Coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and admitting, like the Rambam says, even without getting to tshuva ilah and tshuva tata, without getting into that, just a simple Rambam's tshuva, which is not a simple thing to do at all, but even just a regular thing of coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, "I did something I'm not proud of. I deeply regret it." Being able to acknowledge that you did something in the relationship that wasn't good for the relationship, it brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu into tachtainim. It brings Him into every facet of our life. And of course, the deepest one, the most difficult one, is to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our Yesurin, to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our pain. To bring Him into the places that we're mamish so not proud of. That we think sometimes the worst things in the world. That when somebody that we love is going through something so tragic, and it's so difficult to watch them in pain. And you pasha don't have language even to share with a friend sometimes. Even to go to a friend and to say, "You know, this relative of mine is sick and I'm scared. And I blame HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I'm angry at HaKadosh Baruch Hu." We mamish don't have the capacity to say these things. Couldn't say them to a friend. But to open up a siddur, to open up a tehillim, or to go into a forest just by yourself and scream to the Rebbeinu Shlom, "I know that you're as present with me now in this moment as you ever were." Even now. To say that is to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into your Yisurin. I'll tell you a maisa with my Rebbe. Shebi zeichet refuah shleima, K'nainari is 90 years old, of Parnas Shlita. Many years ago, there was an illness in my family. When there's an illness in the family, it's like, it tears your whole bones apart. Like, you feel so helpless, you're so not in control, it wakes you up. So I couldn't sleep one night. And I'm not embarrassed to tell you that I woke up. I don't even remember the dream that I was having, but I woke up. It was 3 o'clock in the morning and my face was stained with tears. I must have been crying in my sleep. You can't go back to sleep after something like that. I had already made Aliyah. So I called my Rebbe in America. I said, Rebbe, I don't even know what to do. Like, I don't even know what to think. My whole life is upside down. I don't even know how to hold this. Schmoozing. And my Rebbe said to me something that it healed me in a very deep way, and I didn't even realize it at the time, but it's something that I've taken with me for so many years. My Rebbe said to me, Mordechai, it's important that you understand that as much pain as you're in right now, the Rebbeinu Shalom is with you in that pain. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu went down to Mitzrayim with Klal Yisrael. And you can bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into that pain. I didn't even understand the godless of what he was saying when he said it. But years later, I have to tell you, it's the only thing that kept me going. Talmid HaRamchal say that when you put those three things together, mitzvos, tshuva, and yisurin, it spells out matai, it spells out when. As in Ad Masai, when will Mashiach come? When we're willing to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our mitzvos, when we're willing to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our tshuva, when we're willing to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our yisurin. That's what it means to have a relationship with Rebbeinu Shalom. It's not enough. It's not enough just to go through the actions. It's our achrayas to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the lowest aspects of our life, into all the things that we're so not proud of. That's the deepest desire. Only then will HaKadosh Baruch Hu be comfortable, when He truly knows us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't know us until we introduce ourselves. We should be zeicha over the coming months, especially now as we're in Kislev, with Hanukkah coming up, in the deepest darkness of Kislev, to be able to shine a light below ten tefachim, in the places that your mamash not so proud of, to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into all the struggles that you're having, struggles with Shmiras Anayim, struggles with Shmiras Habris, struggles with davening, struggles with learning, struggles with inadequacy, struggles with authenticity, whatever struggle you're having, to mamash come and say to the Rebbeinu Shalom, I'm bringing it to you. I want to be honest, I want to be authentic. I heard once from one of my Rebbeim in Chassidus, that if you had to understand in a quick word what is the Sefer Tanya all about, Tanya is the story of you. That's what Tanya is. Tanya is the story of you. It was a radical shift in the way that the Alter Rebbe presented who we are as people. The Alter Rebbe shifted from speaking about Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov to Nefesh HaBahamis and Nefesh HaLikis. Which, even though it doesn't seem at first glance like such a radical shift, when you really understand what the Alter Rebbe was trying to do, it's a massive reframing of what we are all about. When a person speaks about Yetzer Hara versus Yetzer Tov, and the battle between the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, so that's like saying, this gun was fighting against this gun. But it doesn't describe the person that's holding the gun. And that's why the Alter Rebbe didn't speak so much about Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. He spoke about Nefesh HaBahamis and Nefesh HaLokis. Because everything in Chassidus, especially by the Alter Rebbe, everything was to get to the essence of the thing. The Alter Rebbe was not satisfied, like a Lamdin. He wasn't satisfied with a descriptive terminology. He wanted definitive terms. And the Alter Rebbe said, there's two nefashos, two life forces in a person. Not merely inclinations, but two definitions of who you are. One is called the Nefesh HaBahamis, and the other is called the Nefesh HaLikis. Many years ago, I had the privilege of learning Torah from Holy Brother of Noam. How many years ago, Rebbe, is it?
It's
21 years ago, 22 years ago, on a bus in Poland. 22 years ago on a bus in Poland. And I still quote the things that I learned from you. So what's the difference between the Nefesh HaBahamis and the Nefesh HaLikis? And why is that different than Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov? So listen very carefully. The Nefesh HaBahamis lives with the consciousness of death. The Nefesh HaBahamis is the soul that animates our body. And so the feeling that the Nefesh HaBahamis has is, one day I'm going to die. And as a result, the Nefesh HaBahamis has no choice but to be selfish, has no choice but to be narcissistic. Because the Nefesh HaBahamis is living with what we would call in psychology today an impoverished mentality. The Nefesh HaBahamis will never have enough, because the moment it's born is the beginning of its process towards death. And so everything, the way the Nefesh HaBahamis looks at it is, I just have to chop as much as I possibly can. The Nefesh HaBahamis is willing to trample on any person in order to get where it needs to go. And the Nefesh HaLikis is exactly the opposite. The Nefesh HaLikis, the Alter Rebbe describes, not just as a chelek elakam mimal, because chelek elakam mimal, the pasuk already says, the Alter Rebbe adds in a word. He says, chelek elakam mimal mamish. What does it mean, chelek elakam mimal mamish? Obviously, the Alter Rebbe did not mean literally, because that would be kfira, to say that literally there was a piece of God. That's not what the Alter Rebbe meant. If you look in Tanya, it's clear that that's not what he meant. The Alter Rebbe meant to say that the relationship between the Nefesh HaLikis and the Ribbono Shel Olam is essential. It's like trying to separate a ray of the sun from the sun itself. They share the same essence. And so the Nefesh HaLikis has an abundance mentality. Because the Nefesh HaLikis is not worried about death, because the Nefesh HaLikis is as immortal, so to speak, as God Himself. So the Nefesh HaLakis is not worried about what's going to come tomorrow or the day after that. And the Nefesh HaLakis is willing to forgive. And the Nefesh HaLakis is willing to give in. Because the Nefesh HaLakis is not afraid. The Nefesh HaLakis is selfless. It's not narcissistic. The Nefesh HaLakis is looking for opportunities to serve others. The Alter Rebbe says that the Nefesh HaBahamis of a Jew doesn't come from Shloish Klipos Atmeos, which would be totally without the revelation of goodness or godliness. The Nefesh HaBahamis comes from Klipas Noga, which is the secret of the Eitz Hadas. It's an irbuvia, it's an admixture of Toivira. Which means, the Alter Rebbe says, that a Jew, even in his animal soul, even in the soul that animates his body, it's natural and it's possible for him to be a selfless and a giving person. Which means that a Jew, by definition, is conflicted, but even within our conflict, both sides of ourself, both the side that's godly and the side that's non-godly, have the capacity to serve. Why is this such a revolution? Many years ago, a bachur in yeshiva came to me with the following problem. The year was moving on. It was deep into his Shana Aleph. And the guy was sitting in Beis Medrash, pounding. Wake up for davening, shachris. Right after davening, a seder. Then he went to learn one of the top chavrusas in yeshiva. During the break, he would play ball. Afternoon seder, stark sitting, 60 minutes in an hour, not wasting a minute. Night seder, a shtaka mairiv. And then he would go to town and do some of the most vile, disgusting things. And he was mamish two people. And he came to me and he said, he was so broken. He's like, I feel like I'm mamish a liar. Every day I wake up, I'm into it now. I love learning. This guy was an awesome basketball player. He was an awesome basketball player. He was the coolest kid. He was learning Bechavrusa with a guy who in a million years in high school he never would have spoken to. The guy who he was learning with was a great learner. The fact that they were learning together, the Rebbeim were like laughing. It was almost comical. The coolest guy in yeshiva, and the kid who was like, nah, I don't know how to say that nicely. Mamish, like, mikatsa el katsa. And they were sitting and learning, and it was wild to see them, like, working out of svara and sitting, and both very smart. And they would come to shir. And he's like, Rebbe, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. Which one am I? Am I the guy who sits all day, and I'm learning in yeshiva, and I'm doing so well in yeshiva, or am I the guy that's doing things at night that are mamish unspeakable? Which one am I? So I shared with him this exact idea. Sometimes we think of ourselves as like, I'm one person, and I have a Yetzer Hara, and I have a Yetzer Tov. So I must be the biggest liar in the world, because I'm one person with two totally different inclinations. And the Alter Rebbe says, you're not one person. You're two totally separate nefashos. One wants one thing and the other wants something completely different. And there's a battle being waged for the Ir Ketana, for the small city of our lives. There's a battle being waged. And the question is, which one of these two lives will you choose? And that's an amazing revolution. Because now, he's not a liar. He's not one person who's leading two lives. He's two people who's leading two lives. And now the Avoida becomes, which life will you choose? I'd like to finish tonight by sharing with you what I feel is probably the most important thing that I've learned from Chassidus. And I hope that in the coming months and in the coming years, you'll learn Chassidus and hopefully you'll gain this lesson also. If you're two people with two totally disparate lives, so how do you know which one to choose? Because there are going to be days in your life where you mamish feel like, I can't do it. I can't be that Beis Medrash Jew today. I can't sit through that shir. I can't work on that tais. I can't break my teeth over it anymore. I'm finished with this. And I can't sit there and go to davening and just say the words. And I just can't choose that life anymore. I need to stay in bed. Because it feels so ridiculous for me to be doing this. This other life that I know is true, that my Nefesh HaLukis is yearning for, but I can't do it anymore. And so the greatest lesson that Chassidus teaches us, in my opinion, is the lesson of loyalty. If you want to know who you're really in a relationship with, don't look at it when times are good. Look at it when mamish everything is falling to bits. If you want to know if the relationship is real, when all of the reasons have fallen away, and you're still in the relationship, and you're loyal to the relationship, that's when you're really serving the other person. And the Alter Rebbe says as follows. There's a story that everybody knows. Everybody in this room knows this story. The story is that Avadya, the Navi Avadya, had passed away. And unfortunately, he left behind a massive amount of debt. You know this word, yeah? Left behind a massive amount of debt. And so Eshes Avadya went to Elisha HaNavi. It's appropriate for Kislev, this story. And she says, Avdecha Ishi Meis, your servant, my husband, has died. Va'ati Adati Ki Yari Elikim Haisa, you know, he was a God-fearing Jew. He didn't die because of his Averis. And now we have no money left, and the creditors are coming after us. What should we do? And so Elisha asks Eshes Avadya, so what do you have? She says, I mamish only have one jug of oil. So he says to her, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go around, I want you to collect from every single person in the town, empty vessels. Kalim reikim al tamiti. Don't minimize the empty vessels. Get as many empty vessels as you can. And then he told her to take those empty vessels and close the door. She closed the door. And she pours from that one jug of oil like a Chanukah nes. And she fills up all of the empty vessels. Every empty vessel. And then she goes back to Elisha, and Elisha says to her, now I want you to sell these jugs of oil. Va'at ubanayach tichi banosar. And you and your children are going to live off of the money that you made. It's a nice story, the Alter Rebbe says. But every story in Tanakh, because by us the Torah is lebedik, the Torah is for every generation equally relevant. So it's a nice story, it's a nice miracle, but the Torah doesn't just tell us nice miracles. The Torah doesn't tell us, for example, about Or Kazdim, only B'derech Mash, only B'derech Remez. So why is it fitting, why is it appropriate that this story be included? Comes the Alter Rebbe and he says the most incredible vort. And it was worth it to come tonight just to hear this vort. This story takes place really as a mashal, a conversation between the soul and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The soul is always feminine because it receives from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's Eshes Avadya. Elisha is Keli Shah, the God who listens. And so the soul comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Avdecha, I used to serve you. Before I was born, I mamish served you. Ishi. And I had this Esh Yud, I had this holy fire, this passion that I served you with, and mace. Now it's all dead. All of the service and all of the love that I had, I mamish feel none of it for you. Va'ati adati ki yari elokim haisa. You know that I used to fear you. The two primary emotions in Chassidus are love and fear. Ishi mace, my ahava is dead. I used to fear you. Now I feel nothing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to the soul, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the soul, so if you have no Ahava and you have no Yira, what do you have left to serve me with? So the soul says, the only thing I have is a jug of oil. In Yiddishkeit we have three liquids. We have water. Water is of course the Alma d'Isgalia, it's revealed, it's everywhere. Then there's wine. Wine is a little bit more concealed, but it's easy to get out. All you need to do is stamp on the grapes. And then there's olive oil. Oil has to be extracted from the essence of the olive. That's why you see these things, 100%, 200% pure virgin olive oil. It means it's extracted from the essence. So the soul is saying, the only thing I have left is my essence, namely that I'm a Jew. And listen to the Rabbeinu Shalom says, go gather together, kelim reikim al tamiti. I want you to do mitzvos with no passion. I want you to do mitzvos with no ahava and with no yira. I want you to show up to a shachar, a mincha, a ma'ariv. I want you to show up to seder because you don't want to be there. There's nothing about you that wants to be there. But why are you there? just because you're a Jew. Not because you're inspired. On that day, you're not inspired at all. But just because you're a Jew. And kelim reikim al tamiti. I want you to live that way. 10 mitzvos, 20 mitzvos, 100 mitzvos, 1,000 mitzvos. With no feeling whatsoever. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the soul, now we're going to find out who you really are. In Shemayim, it was possible to serve me with all the Ahava and all the Yira because it was pristine, it was perfect. But the question is, will you be loyal to our relationship when everything is messed up? When you feel so hidden, when you feel so far from me, will you still be loyal to the relationship? Because if you want to know what I really want from you, I want to be served by you for real. Not because of what you get from it, but because of what you're contributing. You see, in every relationship, it feels good to give. It feels good you're going to get married, Rabbi Yisai. And you're going to give to your wife. And you're going to feel like, ah, geschmack, I'm such a good husband. I love my wife so much, and she's so appreciative when I do these things. And so, of course, you're going to do them because you're getting all that positive, good feedback. That's the first couple years of marriage. And then things start to become hergel, like everything in life. And then there's fights, and there's children, and sometimes there's a lack of money, and people running around, and there's all these things going on. And the question is, will you be loyal? The question is, will you do it when there's no positive feedback? Will you do it when there's negative feedback? Will you still be loyal in the relationship when you feel hurt, when you feel in pain, when you feel pushed away? Kelim reikim al tamiti, says the Alter Rebbe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to know, do you enjoy davening? Are you davening because you enjoy davening? You know, there are people that love davening. People that love davening. And in a certain way, when they daven, they're serving themselves. Of course, they should still daven. But in a certain way, they're serving themselves because they walk away after a good davening, they feel like, that was an awesome davening. There's some people that they love the Black Gemara, they love a Geshmak HaTaisus, a Shver Rambam. I heard a Maisa that Rav Gifter said over. Rav Gifter said a Maisa, it's an unbelievable Maisa, that when he was in Telz in Europe, he saw boys dancing. He saw boys dancing outside. One of the boys that was dancing was younger. And Rav Gifter thought to himself, must be that this boy is dancing because he got engaged. And in those days, to get engaged when you were younger was considered arrogant. Like, you know enough to get married? It used to be the yeshiva bachur and them would get married in their late 20s, early 30s because they were sitting and learning. And so Rav Gifter looked and he was like, with a little bit of like a tsaras eye. And he looked a little bit and he was like, you? Like, you're dancing? You get a mazel tov? You got engaged? You're so young. Like, sit and learn. And Rav Gifter, when he was walking outside and he saw these boys dancing, he said, what are you guys dancing about? And this young boy said, it was whatever, not so young, in his early 20s, he said, dancing because we just answered a Shver Rambam. Rav Gifter said, that's what we lost in the Holocaust. We didn't lose 6 million Jews. We lost dancing over a Shver Rambam. But even today, Baruch Hashem, the yeshiva world is built back up. Perhaps in many ways it's built back up bigger than it ever was before in Europe. More people learning Torah today than ever before. You think 100 years ago, they had thousands and thousands and thousands of people sitting and learning the way we have today? It's not true. The elite were learning. Everybody else was doing whatever they were doing to make it. The Torah today we have in a way that we never had before. But dancing over a Shver Rambam? Rav Gifter said, do we still dance over a Shver Rambam? And yet there are people today that they'll say, they'll hear an amazing shir. An amazing shir. Rav Nussbach will say an amazing chiddush in a Rambam. That was unbelievable. Doing chazara that night, you can make a bracha. You have to make a bracha. You have to make a bracha on the geshmak that you're getting. You have to give meiser on it. It's like the hana that you're getting. It's like something unbelievable. Say there. But with that level of hana, it's possible to ask yourself a question. Am I doing it because it's so geshmak, or am I doing it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be in a relationship with me? Because he asked me to do it. Kelim reikim al tamiti, says the Eibishter. Go pour those empty vessels. Keep piling them into your home. And just pour into them. I'm doing this because I'm a Jew. I'm doing this because I'm a Jew. I'm doing this because I'm a Jew. And then he finishes off and he says, Va'at ubanayich techi banayser. And if you've ever learned any chassidus, you know that Ahava and Yira are the children. They're the banayich to the Chochma, Bina, and Das, who are the parents. As the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, that when you have deep thoughts, it gives birth to deep emotions. V'atu banayech tichi banosar. If you'll serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you don't want to, if you'll serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you're loyal to Him, because you want to be in a relationship with Him, because you want to bring Him into tachtoinim, because you want to make Him comfortable in this world, then you'll serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you don't want to. That's the litmus test. Many years ago, I found myself in Esh Kodesh in Woodmere. My Rebbe, who I was again very close with, my Rebbe is a staunch Litvak. And one time I was talking to my Rebbe, and he said to me, Mordechai, I see that we learn together well, but you don't feel inspired by my Hashkafa. I didn't know what to respond to him. My Rebbe is a Gadol B'Torah in every sense of the word. At the time that we were having this conversation, he was in his late 70s. It's very uncomfortable to like look at your Rebbe and say, yeah, it kind of doesn't work for me. But like, I was appreciative that he said it to me. He saw. And it's not that I didn't appreciate the intellectual rigor of the shmuzin that he was giving. They were amazing. But they didn't speak to my soul. It's true. And my Rebbe said to me, Mordechai, I think you need to start learning Chassidus. And so I found myself going to be by Rav Weinberger in Esh Kodesh in Woodmere. And I'll never forget a story that Rav Weinberger told. And he said it many times. If you ever listen to him, he says it like, maybe it's once a year. And he says this story all the time. He tells a story of a couple that comes to sit with him. And the couple is having marital discord. It's not going so well for them. So Weinberger asks, okay, who wants to go first? So the husband says, I'll go first. And the husband says, Rebbe, I don't know what she wants from me. I do everything she asks. I change the light bulbs. I'm a little league coach. I make a parnasa. I take out the garbage. Everything a wife would want, I do. The whole time that he's talking and describing all of the things that he does and how much he kills himself for his wife is sitting there with her arms folded, just shaking her head. And he says, Rebbe, you see, even now it's not enough. Even now it's not enough. It's never enough for her. And Weinberger turns to the wife and he says, sounds like he's a pretty good husband. What's going on? So she looks at Rav Weinberger and she says, Rebbe, do you think I married him to take out the garbage? Do you think I married him to change the light bulb? I didn't even marry him to make a parnasa. I married him because of the way that he looked at me under the chuppah. And when's the last time that he looked at me that way? And it's such a powerful thing if you think about it. If you just open your heart for a second, it's the most powerful thing to think about. Because what is the wife really saying? It's possible to do so much and not to be. It's possible that you're doing a tremendous amount of things, but where's the feeling? Where's the regesh in the relationship? So many of us are asking that question. That we're showing up every single day and we're asking ourselves, where's the feeling? Where's the geschmack? Yeah, it's good to have a beautiful yeshiva davening on a Friday night where everybody's dancing. And it's good to come for a Yad Kislev Fabrengen and everybody's having a good time. And the food and... But tomorrow we're going to wake up and it's going to be the same shachris. Tomorrow we're going to wake up and it's going to be the same black tomorrow. So where do I find that regesh? Where do I find that feeling? And Alter Rebbe tells us, Kelim Rekim Al Tamiti. Stay loyal. Serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't serve yourself. Don't let your narcissism get in the way. Don't ask yourself, how can I be inspired? Don't do it because you're a good guy. And I'm resume building. I'm a good guy. I've always been a good guy. I was always in that top shir. I was always in that. What do you mean? I'm a good guy. Of course I'm going to do it. If you do that, you're serving yourself. The Rebbeinu Shlom wants to be tachtoinim. The Rebbeinu Shlom wants to be in the deepest crevices of who we are. And in the deepest crevices of who we are, we're only one thing. Ich bin ayid. The only thing we are truly is we're Jews. So pour that oil. Just keep pouring that oil. Over and over again. Tomorrow you may not have the most geshmak of davening. But if you daven anyway and you mamish think to yourself, if it was up to me, I'd be in bed. If it was up to me, I'd be in bed. So my nefesh abahamis would love to be in bed. but I'm loyal to the Eibishter. I find the godliness and the goodness inside all aspects of myself, both in my nefesh alakis and in my nefesh abahamis. In that way, va'atu banayach tichi banayser, we should take a bizoicha. The car of mamish to greet Mashiach, teichu fumiyad in every sense of the word, which is only going to happen if we're loyal to the Rabbanu Shalom in dark times. And that's where we're mamish holding, in the darkest of times. Really, I should end right now, but I want to tell you a very quick maisa. I was in America last week for the Jersey City shooting. I was there. Unbelievable thing. This is in dark times, Rabbi Say. We're growing up in a dar. I didn't grow up in this dar. Anti-Semitism wasn't real to me. It wasn't real to me, b'chalal. It's dark times. It's dark times to be a Jew. 22% rise in anti-Semitism. It's coming again. Ezer Hashem, we're going to head it off at the pass this time with Achdus. It's dark times. It's hard to be a Jew a little bit. So those who hold on tight, we're going to be the ones to greet Mashiach. Those who hold on now in those final moments, in these final, it's not even minutes anymore, it's final moments before Mashiach comes. The loyalty that we have to the Eibishter is going to be the schus that we have to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu together.
Some, 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 some.